There's just no easy way to jump into our topic today. There's nothing light, nothing humorous about what we're going to cover today. The reality is slavery exists in our world. The reality is sexual exploitation exists as part of that. It's estimated that in our world, there are still over 40 million people in slavery. And of that 40 million, one in four are children. There in 2016, they estimated that 3.8 million adults were victims of forced sexual exploitation in our world. And over 99% of those are women. Human trafficking amounts to about $150 billion a year. Two-thirds of that coming out of the sex trade. In India, every 8 minutes, a child goes missing. And half of them are never found again. So for the time it takes us to run our two services today, 26 children in India will have disappeared. For the time for us to live one day, 180 children will disappear. That is the equivalent of our entire Southridge Kids program. Every day, the amount of kids that we have coming to our church disappears in India. Globally, it's estimated that 4 billion people live outside the protection of law. Over half our world does not have the law to protect them. Last year, we did a series in October called Jesus and Justice, and we introduced our church to the organization IJM, International Justice Mission. And part of that, we hosted a conference over a weekend, and on Sunday, we had Nina come and speak to us. Nina was a lawyer, or is a lawyer, for IJM in Uganda. And she talked about how her work every week is to help widows who have had their land forcibly stolen from them and help them to recover that land. IJM has now become one of the biggest anti-slavery organizations in the world. They fight slavery, forced labor, sexual exploitation all across this globe. I love their vision statement. IJM's vision statement is this: rescue millions, protect half a billion, and make justice for the poor unstoppable. Just let that sink in for a second. That is a massive vision statement. Massive. And so this year, when the opportunity came up to participate in Freedom Sunday, I jumped on. I said, we got to do this. We want to be part of over 5,000 churches in 50 different countries, over a million believers, talking about slavery and praying about slavery today. Bringing a spotlight on injustice in our world. Here's where, as I was thinking this through, this is where I came to. I said, I think I have a problem. Because most of us sitting here live in an amazing country, we do. And I'm betting that almost all of us have never experienced the type of injustice that we're talking about today. We may have heard it, but we've never experienced it. And so how do we jump out of our cultural mindset to actually be able to get to the place where we can empathize with those who are oppressed, who are in slavery, who are taken advantage of? I mean, we think injustice sometimes is when we get cut off in traffic, going, my rights have been violated, you stole my spot. And we get upset at the person ahead of us. We become indignant, and we think that is injustice. Injustice is not about a personal affront. It goes way deeper than that. I came across this this definition of injustice, looking at some of the IJM material that I was sent. And they define it as this way: injustice is the abuse of power that occurs when one person takes from others the good things that God intends for them, their life, their dignity, their freedom, and the fruits of their labor. The writer of Ecclesiastes points to the reality of injustice when in chapter 4, verse 1, he says, "Again, I looked and saw all the oppression that was taking place under the sun. I saw the tears of the oppressed, and they have no comforter. Power was on the side of their oppressors, and they have no comforter." And he's talking about the utter hopelessness that those who find themselves being oppressed are in. They have no power, and the ones in power are not the ones that are taking care of them. The ones that God had put in terms of his design to take care of people are the very ones that are using their power to abuse. And so it's parents, it is bosses, it is the police system, it is the government sometimes that uses the power that God has given them to actually be the oppressors. And there is no one to speak up, no one to stand for them. The oppressed have no freedom. And if you're like me, having lived in Canada a good chunk of time, even if we've been to other places in the world, we really do not understand what it is to feel and be in a place where we don't have freedom. Because when we do not have freedom, it leads to having no hope, no sense of safety. I was talking this week with Dennis, who's our on staff part-time as our director of care, pastoral care. His other half-time job is he's currently the interim director of New Hope. And New Hope is our fellowship agency that helps refugees as they come into Canada get settled, adjusted, and then helps them move out and helps them start their own life so that they can continue on their own. And so we were talking about, he was just sharing with me some conversations he had had with a number of the refugees. And basically our conversation went like this. Refugees who come into Canada come from places where there is usually no freedom. And they definitely have been in a place where they have experienced, they have no hope. And Dennis said to me, "You know what, Brent, one of the things we have to do when they come to Canada and we're working with these families and we're living beside them and teaching them skills of integration, one of the things we actually have to teach them is how to live free." Let that sink in for a second. How to live free. Something we just take for granted. Last year, our family had the privilege of having a young lady from Colombia live with us for a number of months. Her name was Lucy. And a couple of months in, Pam had this conversation with Lucy. We were all there, and she asked her this question. "Lucy, what's kind of the biggest difference you see from living in Colombia and living here in Canada?" Not missing a beat, Lucy said, "I feel safe." Like, when was the last time you thought, "Oh, I feel safe"? Isn't it a great feeling? We don't even think that way most of the time. That she wouldn't have to worry about her safety to walk from our house up to the library. Whereas every time she goes out in Colombia, it's a fear. We can't even comprehend the injustice in this world sometimes because we live in such a fabulous, wonderful country. And we take it for granted. In the Old Testament, God set out a number of parameters for the Israelite nation to worship him. He gave them a number of things that they needed to follow in order to worship him properly. And one of those things that he gave them was this idea or this call to fast. And he only required them to do it on one day of the year. It was the Day of Atonement, when the whole nation came together and offered sacrifices for the forgiveness of their sins. And part of that process, part of that worship was them fasting for that day. Now, God didn't stop the people from fasting at other points if they wanted to. So oftentimes they did. And by the time you get to Isaiah's time, the prophet Isaiah, fasting had taken on a little bit of a life of its own. And in chapter 58 of Isaiah, Isaiah is speaking to the people on behalf of God because the people had come to the place where they had misunderstood what fasting was about. And they had come to the place where they were fasting because they believed God required an outward action of them. And if they fasted, then God would listen to them. It was like getting a brownie point system. If I have a number of fasts, build up my brownie points, then if I get enough points, God will listen to what I'm praying about or listen to what I'm asking for. And everything will be okay. But in Isaiah 58, you start reading in at the end of verse 3. And this is God's observation of how they were handling fasting. Yet on the day of your fasting, you do it, you do as you please, and exploit all your workers. Your fasting ends in quarreling and strife, in striking each other with wicked fists. You cannot fast as you do today and expect your voice to be heard on high. Is this the kind of fast I have chosen? Only a day for a man to humble himself? Is it only for bowing one's head like a reed and for lying on sackcloth and ashes? Is that what you call a fast? A day acceptable to the Lord? And then he really gets after them. Verse 6, is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe him and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood? And he ends there with a question. His point, I think, in what Isaiah is telling the people is this, that when we come to worship God, which was what fasting was supposed to do for the Israelites, it was to prepare them, to get them in a place, a right heart place before God. But as you can see by the comments, they weren't doing it to get right for, before God. They were just doing it out of ritual. Because here's the point, when we come to worship God, it should change us. When we come to worship God, it should impact us in such a way that we shouldn't be doing the things that don't please God outside of it. That's what he's calling out. He's saying, how can you fast when you turn around in that same day you exploit your workers? When you turn around and you get into fist fights, how is that worshiping God in the proper way? It's not. And he calls them out on it. In essence, he's saying, you can come to church every Sunday at the appropriate time. You can take time out of your week to do that. And you can come searching for God, to hear from God, to worship God. But if it doesn't change you, what good is it? And the change that Isaiah highlights is this, that when we worship God, one of the things that should occur in our lives, that when we worship God, it should take our eyes off ourselves and help us to see others. That's the whole point of the verses carrying on in 6 and 7. Everything he says is about someone else. It's not about us. And if we had time to read the previous verses, the people were fasting and they were complaining about why God wasn't doing something for them because they were being obedient in fasting. And it was all about them. So they came to worship God to try and get something out of God. Isaiah turns around and says, look, when we come to worship God, evidence of worshiping him means that we actually start looking at others. That's why when we frame our mission statement at Southridge and we say, love God, change this world one life at a time, it's what Isaiah is pointing out in chapter 58, so that when we are called to love God, we worship him. And as a result of loving him and worshiping him, our eyes shift off ourselves and we look out to where God has placed us and the people God has put in our lives, and we are there to help them find God, help them discover the love of God, help change their lives. When we live out our mission as a church, we are actually doing what Isaiah is calling us to do in this chapter. We can't worship God truly and not have it affect our whole life. India is one of the countries where there is a lot of injustice. In fact, it is estimated that the most slaves in the world in one country reside in India. They estimate that at least over 18 million people are in slavery in India. That's why IJM has 5 field offices in India. And in fact, one of their offices has helped free over 7,000 slaves. I wanted to tell you a story of one of the people they have freed there. Her name is Gauri. Gauri and her husband Kumar were expecting their second child, and they ran into some medical expenses to do with the pregnancy. And they just didn't have the money. So Kumar, who worked for a guy wood cutting and making bricks, went to his boss and asked if he would be able to borrow from his boss 25,000 rupees. Now that sounds like a lot of money, but when you convert it over to Canadian, it's just under $600. $600. That's what he's asking for as a loan, $600. The boss agreed to provide him the money on the condition that the only form of repayment would be through his labor. He had to work off the debt. So they agreed. That's when their nightmare began, because their boss basically put them into forced slavery. The boss was cruel. He was verbally and physically abusive. And when Gauri decided to speak up, trying to better their conditions, she was, for her efforts, tied to a cow shed for a whole day while her husband was beaten in front of her eyes. Then came the breaking point for Gauri when their 2-year-old daughter was beaten with a branch for playing with the water tap. Gauri screamed at the owner, who retaliated by kicking her down and stomping on her and hurting her so much that she couldn't stand for several days. She was hopeless. She said this, "No one stood up for me, and no one will." You see, slave owners are relentless, they're calculated, they're tenacious, they're unafraid to use their power, their money, and their influence to oppress the people that they are oppressing. While Gauri was recovering, and this incident, by the way, of when she was stomped on, took place 10 years after the loan. So think about that. $600 Canadian dollars. They're still working for him 10 years later. IJM had heard that there was something going on, and so they had started to investigate the place where Gauri worked. And then when they got a hold of Gauri and she told them her story, they quickly mobilized the police and they arrested the boss and freed 22 others who were in slavery in that one location. The laborers were relieved from being freed from the owner, but they were still terrified to tell the officials what actually had happened, the abuse that they had suffered. Only Gauri was brave enough to speak up, and she encouraged everyone else to tell the police everything the owner had done to them. She said this, "We've waited enough. We've had enough. It's time to tell the truth." Here's the thing that oftentimes I don't think we understand because of the culture we live in. We hear these stories of oppression. We hear these stories of slavery. We hear these stories of exploitation, and we think to ourselves, why don't they just go run away? Why don't they just get out? Why don't they just leave? Here's the reality. Anyone who finds themselves in these situations can't leave. The video that we started this message with left out a couple of facts of the story. The only reason that young, sweet 14-year-old girl was able to leave was because a woman found out about what was going on and rescued her, grabbed her, and took her back to her grandpa. She needed someone to save her. Just like Gowrie needed someone to intervene on her behalf. Jesus, in Luke chapter 4, it tells us that at the beginning of his ministry, he's in his hometown of Nazareth, and he stands up and he reads some words from Isaiah. And in those words, he says this: "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to release the oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." What Jesus is saying there is his ministry on earth was to come and release the oppressed. And if you've been at church long, very long, and if you've been here, excuse me, you will know that part of that oppression is spiritual oppression, and that Jesus came to save us from the bondage of sin. He came to save us from the effects and the results and the consequences of sin. That was his main thing. But whenever Jesus went anywhere in talking to the people, whenever he came and proclaimed the good news of that salvation, he always tied it with the physical. He never just gave them this great news of the spiritual without actually helping people physically. So he healed people, their blindness. He helped those who were lame to walk again. He helped people where they needed help. And so when he announces to the people that I'm here to proclaim good news, he doesn't just stop it at the good news. Thank you. He keeps going and tells them that there is a physical aspect of why he's come to save them. Jesus is interested in not only our spiritual reality, but also our physical reality. God never designed humanity to be a place of injustice, where we would take advantage of each other for our own gain. But because of sin entering the world, that's one of the results of that. Here's the thing that I see in Isaiah chapter 58. When God calls everyone out in the nation of Israel, he tells them what they can do in order to actually worship God the way he wants to be worshiped. And it's the same reality, I think, for us today. God always calls us to action, not just awareness. God doesn't just make us aware of some injustice and then say, okay, hey, I'm glad you're just aware of it. Just think on that. God actually expects us to do something about it. Just like Jesus came and proclaimed that he was there to do something about it. He expects us to go into action. Notice, this is what really stood out to me in verse 6 of Isaiah 58. Notice what God tells the people through Isaiah, what actually fasting he wants. I know the hard one is earlier is you know, loose the chains of injustice and cords of the yoke and free the oppressed. And you're going, I don't have anyone who's oppressed in my life. I don't have anyone who's wearing a yoke. No one's impressed, you know, in my circle of friends. So what does it mean for me, Brent? All you have to do is read verse 7. And this is what it means to help those who are oppressed. Is it not to share your food with the hungry? Is it not to clothe the naked? Is it not to give shelter to those who don't have any? Is it not to help those who are our flesh and blood? God gets very practical. And so you might be sitting here going, hey, Brent, how do I help the injustice in the world? How do I do that? It's pretty simple, actually. Let me suggest, say, three things for you to consider this morning. The first one is this. Whenever you see injustice, you need to raise your voice. You need to be willing to stand up and be vocal about it, to call it out, to affirm Gowrie when she says, it's time to tell the truth. We need to be truth tellers, that it is not okay for injustice to thrive, survive, or even exist. I think the second thing that we also need to do is not only raise our voice in the public square or in a setting where people need to listen, we also need to raise our voice to God and pray, which we're going to do today and which I'm actually going to ask you to do in a few minutes. But the third thing I think that we need to do, if we're actually going to, you know, listen to God as he calls us to action, not just be aware of a situation, is this: we need to use our resources that God has given us. We need to give. We need to, when we see someone who is hungry, be willing to share our food with him or her. We need to be able to take our clothes and give it to the person who needs it. We need to be willing up to open up our home or provide shelter for those who need it. And we definitely need to do it for those who we are related to. That's what God calls us to do. But is there more than that? I think there is. When we come together as a church, I think we have a bigger responsibility than just the individual responsibility we all have that God has placed on us. I think there are things that God calls us to do as a church, and one of those might be, you know, James Hill. We serve in James Hill every day of the school day, a week, serving breakfast. You're going, well, what, Brent, why are we doing that? It's because there are kids at James Hill who come to school hungry. Yes, there are things in our own society where we can step into. And it's as simple as serving 80 or 90 kids that we do every day of the week a meal in the morning so that they can learn. Sometimes it's getting into the mindset and understanding what's going on globally in our world. And here at Southridge, we take serious our global responsibility. That's why generally every year we have a couple of teams that go out to different places in the world, and we've formed partnerships with ministries that are doing work in these areas to help alleviate poverty that is going on. This March, we have a team going to Mexico to work with our partners at Eternal Anchor to work with kids that are there. And so if you're interested in that, they have an informational meeting on October 14th after the services that you can find out what they're going to do. You can find out the cost. There's some information in your program this morning that you can look at. We also work with Starfish Ministries in Haiti, and we have been for a number of years there. In fact, we've adopted a village called Palmier, where every year we're sending teams to help the people of Tricot and Palmier. We've built a school there because one of the best ways to help people out of poverty is education. And so we are helping people globally. And here's the thing that I've always found, that when people get outside of our cultural context, have the opportunity to travel somewhere else to see a different reality than what they're used to, God always opens their eyes. And maybe God is calling you to go on one of these trips this year. We're sending a team to Haiti in February. There'll be an informational meeting October 28th, if you want to find out more about that. Maybe God is calling you to one of those trips to witness firsthand what it is to live in a society that is not Canada. Or maybe you're sitting there going, Brent, you know what? These stories you've shared today through video and speaking has really touched my heart, and I can see that IGM is doing some amazing work. And maybe God is asking you to partner with IGM so that IGM can continue to rescue people out of oppression and slavery. IGM has a program that they've started called the Freedom Partner Program. And basically, they're just asking people to become part of a freedom partner with them. And what that means is to obviously give some money so that it'll help the ministry free people. And a Freedom Partner is someone who commits to giving basically a dollar a day, $31 a month, to help IGM free people all over this world from slavery. And so if that's an interest to you, you can go to their website, which is igm.ca/FP, and you can sign up to do that. And if you do that, they will send you updates. They will send you prayer things to pray about, all that fun stuff, amazing stuff that you can be a part of. What is God asking you to do today? Because we can't come here this Sunday and worship Him. And worship Him. And walk away with just our eyes on ourselves. We can't if we've truly worshiped God. God always calls us to action, not just awareness. This world will never change if all we do is get aware. We actually have to act. So what I want to do is I want to pray, because I committed our church to pray today for the injustice of this world. So I want to spend a minute praying. I'm going to call the worship team up to join me. And then I'm going to give you an opportunity to pray where you are. They'll just play for a couple of minutes. And I'm going to ask you just to pray. Pray for some injustice that God has laid on your heart. Pray for someone that you know needs prayer, that God needs to intervene in their life. Pray maybe that God would speak to you to let you know how you can act in this area. What you need to do. Whether it's something globally, whether it's something locally, something in your family. What is God asking you to do as a result of worshiping Him this morning? And for those of you who are here this morning, maybe you've never prayed or you think that's kind of awkward. I know, it can be. But God's always ready to listen. You don't have to be eloquent. You can stumble. You can mumble. You can just say a few short words and sit there and listen and ask God to speak to you in some way. That's all you need to do. So pray with me. Dear Heavenly Father, we come to You this morning, and it has been a heavy morning. Lord, because these are heavy things that are going on. There are millions and millions of people in our world that are trapped. They have no hope. They have no way to escape. And Lord, we talk about Your love all the time here at Southridge. We talk about how fantastic it is when we receive it. And it is. Because Your gospel is good news. It is something that frees us from the sin that has enslaved us. And yet with that good news comes some responsibility. God, as we worship You, You call us into action. Lord, what are You asking us to do as a church? What are You asking me to do even next week? How can I step into this world? How can we step into this world and fight injustice? How can we free those who have a yoke of slavery on them? How can we free those who feel trapped?